Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
As Hurricane Irma disrupts power and air conditioning, 8 residents in a sweltering Broward County nursing home die.
Will this stir some action at the legislature? Well, by gosh, I hope it does.
Also this week, for most Floridians, Irma was more of a wind than a water storm. But just the opposite was true in places like Jacksonville and Hillsborough County.
It's really important that people have a predetermined location that they're going to evacuate to if they live close to those rivers and in the flood area.
We'll also learn how Florida plans to reconnect with storm-shocked tourists in the wake of Hurricane Irma, and learn how some of the state's best-known professional athletes are helping the recovery effort. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Thanks so much for rejoining us this week. As with so many other things, Hurricane Irma compelled us to cancel last week's Capitol Report so we could concentrate on local emergency reporting. But even though Irma is gone, her impacts linger. This week's Capitol Report will focus on that aftermath. Irma proved fatal to 8 patients in a Hollywood Hills nursing home, which lost power and air conditioning during the storm. Many more such homes and assisted living facilities statewide also lost power, prompting evacuations and efforts by first responders to make sure those residents who remained in those facilities were safe. From member station WMFE in Orlando, Health News Florida reporter Abe Abaraya takes a look at what's next for these homes.
It's the middle of the day in DeLand, a city between Orlando and Daytona Beach. Temperatures today are in the 90s. At the Good Samaritan Society, Florida Lutheran Retirement Community, the doors are wide open. You can hear the hum of a generator that provides emergency power, but it isn't big enough to run the air conditioning. 92-year-old Mary Mosley is standing at the front desk, chatting with the staff and going through old photos. She's found one of her back in Michigan. She's posing with a snowman.
This is snow. This is where you live for the snow days.
It's been 3 days without AC at this facility, where residents live in apartments, assisted living, or one of the 60 nursing home beds. But Mosley, who lives in her own apartment, isn't complaining.
If you don't have something, they're there for you. Okay. They're very good.
So you've been able to get outside, kind of cool off and get some breeze, that kind of thing?
That's about all you can do here, get cooled off.
That's right.
Cooling off without power will get easier in the future. Right now, federal rules require nursing homes have backup power to run the fire suppression system, elevators, and emergency lights. If patients are on dialysis or a ventilator, that equipment must have emergency power. Eric Cody is with Powered for Patients, a nonprofit that creates better emergency power system plans for healthcare facilities. He says air conditioning is not on the list of systems that are required for emergency power.
However, this November, that is all going to change. New federal regulations are going to kick in that will require hospitals, nursing homes, and long-term care facilities to have a form of alternative energy source for air conditioning.
On the state level, there are 84,000 nursing home beds. Florida law requires that if any of the state's 600 nursing homes have a generator, it get tested during inspections. But that didn't prevent the deaths at the rehabilitation center at Hollywood Hills this week.
I just appalled that we're still having these conversations.
That's Brian Lee, executive director of Families for Better Care, which advocates for nursing home residents. He says this has been an issue for more than a decade.
Post all the 4 hurricanes, post Katrina, post Harvey, and we're still having problems, and we can't get this figured out. So go back to your original question of, will this stir some action at the legislature? Well, by gosh, I hope it does.
Jason Broder, a Sanford Republican who chairs the Healthcare Appropriations Committee in the Florida House, says there may need to be some regulatory changes for assisted living facilities. He says changes may need to come around inspections.
A lot of these assisted living facilities, who we would deem some of the mom and pops, are not able to keep up with the current Florida building code standards.
State law already requires that nursing homes have transfer agreements with other facilities, but it's hard to keep those agreements when 65% of the state was without power after the storm. Rick Morgan is the administrator of the Good Samaritan Nursing Home in DeLand.
We have agreements, but for example, we have agreements with some of the facilities where they were looking at evacuating, but we have a hard time accepting them when we don't have power yet.
Okay.
You know, we're kind of in the same situation they are.
Morgan opted to change their situation. They spent $30,000 to get a generator brought in big enough to power the air conditioning in the building with the nursing home.
And then once that's in place, then we can start working with the hospitals to try and take some of their residents because they're getting overloaded with the people they have at the hospital right now.
Okay, flip the switch to manual.
Out back behind the DeLand nursing home, one of the directors fires up a generator the size of a semi-trailer. The rented generator will stay through hurricane season. Next year, the nursing home plans a more permanent solution. For Health News Florida, I'm Abe Abaraya in Orlando.
Even though Hurricane Irma has left Florida, it left behind many neighborhoods several feet underwater. From member station WUSF in Tampa, Steve Newborn takes us to one such neighborhood along the Alafia River in Hillsborough County.
Nancy Chadwick gazed at the water and mud separating her from her daughter's home on Rose Street, shook her head, and said she'd have to come back to check on her later. It was impassable. Chadwick's used to this scene. She lived across the Alafia River on Josie Lane for 28 years.
I've been through this too many times, and I moved the hell out.
Chadwick says Hillsborough County bought her land and returned it to its natural role as a floodplain. She now lives far from the fickle Alafia in Waimama.
We had 28 years and dealing with this, and my prayers are here. I'm just hoping everybody is going to be safe.
This scene where Rose Street disappears into black water is repeated on River Drive and several other streets jutting into the Alafia from Lithia Pinecrest Road. It's also repeated across the state. The Santa Fe River northwest of Gainesville threatened to close down Interstate 75 just as evacuees from Irma are streaming back home. And around the Tampa Bay area, rivers reaching flood stage include the Anclote in Pasco County, the Hillsborough and Little Manatee Rivers in Hillsborough County, the Withlacoochee in Pasco and Hernando counties, the Myakka in Sarasota County, and the Peace River in Hardee and DeSoto counties. The Alafia River has crested at 23 feet and is gradually falling. The National Weather Service reports it's now just over 17 feet above sea level. But that drop is of little consolation to Wendy Zeman. As cicadas struck up a chorus, she pointed to her son's house, where he was busy dumping soggy carpet onto his front porch.
I've been out here since I was 11, 30-something years. And this is the third flood I've been through out here. And this is the worst, but you just don't get used to it. It's just, I mean, you know it's coming. You know there's a possibility. You can prepare for it, but then it never sets until afterwards.
Still, Zeman says disasters like this seem to bring out the best in people. They've had food brought in from several restaurants, and people from the nearby Fishhawk community donated money, food, and cleaning supplies. Mark Austin, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Ruskin, says residents may be able to soon dry out. He says that's because the worst flooding usually takes place after storms pass through.
It generally does take about 24 to 48 hours, so we tend to see a little bit of a lag between that heavy rain and the river flooding, which is, you know, contrary to aerial flooding or flash flooding we receive during the heavy rainfall event.
Austin says these crests are like large lumbering swells that move slowly downriver, so it can be a week before levels return to normal.
When we do have a hurricane approaching or a tropical storm or even just a tropical depression, it doesn't take a powerful hurricane to cause major river flooding concerns. It's really important that people have a predetermined location that they're going to evacuate to if they live close to those rivers and in the flood area.
He says the Hillsborough River is about to crest, but that will impact few people since most of the river floodplain has been set aside as preserved areas. That can't be said for places such as the Anclote in Pasco County, where several neighborhoods remain flooded. Zeman says people here in the Alafia aren't about to let a storm like Irma uproot them.
But I mean, the people that choose to stay, it's because they've been here so long. It's just their community and everybody's family out here.
And even though sunny skies have returned, the ground for many residents remains a soggy mess. I'm Steve Newborn in Tampa.
Still to come on Capitol Report, it may have been one of the most powerful storms ever recorded, but Irma largely spared Florida's Capitol County.
We're up to about 87 structures we found that were impacted to some degree. Again, the impacts are still predominantly minor.
Regardless of the physical damage from Hurricane Irma, the state's image as a safe, welcoming tourist destination also took a hit. The refurbishing of that image is also part of Florida's recovery process.
It's a tough needle to thread because you can't say everything's fine, come on down, y'all, as much as you'd like to say it. You've got to be respectful of what the situation is.
And as Irma recovery efforts continue, some Florida athletes are stepping up to help out.
There's been a lot of people that are hurting and a lot of people that have lost a lot of valuable stuff to them. But because of what you've been doing and because of how much you care, so many people still have hope.
Certainly, Hurricane Irma was dangerous and even deadly in many parts of Florida. And as the storm approached the capital city, there was fear bordering on panic. But the worst never came. In Leon County this week, city and county workers set their usual duties aside to go out and assess damage from the storm. Nick Evans tagged along.
I tell you what. It's Tuesday morning at the Leon County Public Safety Complex. There's about two dozen people here broken up in teams of two. They'll spread out over the county looking for downed trees or other signs of damage. Each pair is responsible for a different zip code, and they've been pulled from all sorts of different departments.
I'm Rhonda Cooper, and I am the Literacy Project Coordinator for the Leon County Public Library.
Shauna Martin with Department of Development Support and Environmental Management. I am an urban planner with the county.
Cooper and Martin got zip code 32311 in the southeastern corner of Leon County. Stretching well beyond Tallahassee city limits, much of the area is rural with limited cell phone service.
It's not giving you the address.
We don't have any cell reception, so we may just have to go to paper.
And a lot of private roads.
That one's blue, too. See if you see a no trespassing sign.
Cooper and Martin rumble down each unpaved byway, not clearly marked no trespassing, because collecting this data is important as part of the county's survey for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. All 67 of Florida's counties are receiving public assistance, which supports the local government's response efforts. But only 37 counties have gotten approval for individual assistance. That money goes directly to homeowners to cover damages their insurance won't. Cooper, Martin, and all the other crews are tallying damage to apply for that chunk of assistance. And as they crisscross their territory, Martin highlights the roads they visited.
Well, we're getting more orange on the map.
But all morning, the most noticeable trend is the lack of damage. David Duvall is covered in sweat and sawdust, cutting up a massive fallen limb in his front yard. He still doesn't have power, but he counts himself lucky.
As if on radio you could see. The top of this big one, it fell on the, that's my pump house, and knocked about half of the roof down last storm. And this time we were just lucky. It's not as big a tree and it didn't hit anything, no structures anyway. So we were tickled about that.
A little ways up the street, Stephen Wilson didn't fare quite as well.
I heard a gust of wind and the tree crack, and then all of a sudden it hit the roof, wham! And I was in the bed laying right there underneath it.
Wow, really? Yeah. Right over top of it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it didn't go through the roof. Thank goodness it only, it cracked the sheetrock that was hanging down.
The lights aren't on for Wilson yet either. Still, he says things are getting back to normal surprisingly quickly.
They came and cut the tree yesterday.
Oh, that's fast.
And the roofing guys have already been here and they've covered the hole up, and they'll be back tomorrow to finish working on it.
Friday afternoon, emergency manager Kevin Peters explains the initial reports seem to suggest Leon County dodged a bullet.
As of this morning, we had a couple of crews out yesterday still. We're up to about 87 structures we found that were impacted to some degree. Again, the impacts are still predominantly minor. We found maybe a handful, four or five of those that maybe would qualify as major under the FEMA guidelines.
Elsewhere in the state, the week reveals a parade of bad news. Historic flooding in Jacksonville, utter destruction in parts of the Florida Keys, and 8 tragic deaths at a Hollywood nursing home. But in Leon County, store shelves are filling up. People are returning to work, and kids are back in school. The mundane feels like a monumental blessing. Duvall and Wilson get their electricity from a co-op called Talquin, and damage on transmission lines run by Duke Energy delayed restoration by a few days. Wednesday, they got their power back. Duvall says it's better than Christmas. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
There were so many places in Florida that were hard hit by Hurricane Irma, but few were hit quite as hard as the Keys, especially Key West. The destruction there was so bad that it wasn't confined to the land. In fact, the U.S. Coast Guard is encouraging boaters to avoid the waters around Key West, at least for now, due to unsafe infrastructure and debris in the water. The Coast Guard is warning that safe navigation around the Keys can't be ensured at this time, and a guard commander cautions that random boats in the area could further hamper ongoing relief efforts. Besides, there's no pressing need for craft of any size to visit the place right now because the port of Key West will remain closed for the weekend. Hurricane Irma slammed into the Keys back on Sunday before traveling up the rest of the state. Rebuilding Florida's brand won't be easy in the wake of Hurricane Irma, but the job is crucial to recovery in a state where tourism generates $80 billion a year and employs 1.2 million workers. Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash discussed the challenge with industry consultant and ThinkSpot Incorporated president Dale A. Brill. Brill dealt with the aftermath of four successive hurricanes in 2004-2005 as Visit Florida Chief Marketing Officer and served as head of the Office of Tourism, Trade, and Economic Development under Governor Charlie Crist.
What would you recommend right now that our tourism marketing strategy be?
It's a tough needle to thread because you can't say everything's fine, come on down, y'all, as much as you'd like to say it. You've got to be respectful of what the situation is.
Lately, if we think about Florida tourism marketing and recent headlines, it was all about the value of tourism marketing.
Sure. The research is clear that the value of state tourism marketing is very real. It's done through studies from Clemson University on the academic side, as well as those that have a vested interest. And now more than ever, tourism marketing is critical because this is when the industry comes together like no other time. And we did this again in 2004, 2005. And although Irma is a completely different storm, the reaction is the same. And that is trying to make resources available. And what folks should be doing at this point is following plans that are in place, having learned from the 2004-2005 storms. And again, that historical knowledge, that legacy that Visit Florida has had now, for three decades, makes them absolutely critical to the state's long-term and even now short-term economic prosperity.
Describe some of the challenges that you faced after those chain of hurricanes.
The most vexing thing is that the lack of geography knowledge that our visitors have. For the largest part, we found that folks in the feeder markets, whether it's the East Coast or Midwest, they don't differentiate because they really don't know that Fort Pierce and Fort Myers are on opposite ends of the state. So the consumers think, oh, well, Florida is closed. That's really hard, again, given the need to tell the world that we're still open, but being sensitive to the catastrophe that some of our brothers and sisters and neighbors have experienced in parts of our state.
How long did you wait before putting out the word that Florida is open?
I wish I could tell you it was more science than art. It's a little bit of both. You're looking at really 7 to 8 days, and you're looking for the news cycle to start to shift. And again, that depends on what the next big story might be. But for example, the stories or the focus on Harvey took kind of a secondary. We saw that fade away as Irma was approaching and Florida became the epicenter. There will be some story that will come, whether it's in politics or global environment. It could be North Korea, et cetera. And I hate to sound like you're being crass, but it's just that the nature of the communications media storylines start to shift. That's really the time when you don't have an immediate contradiction to you saying, hey, there are parts of our state that would gladly welcome you and enjoy the beauty that is Florida, without having the next segment of the news channel or an interruption saying, oh, okay, here's another picture of Florida completely devastated.
In terms of the tools you use to get the message out, do you focus on one platform before another?
a considerable difference between the response to Irma and the storms that we had in 04 and 05 in the mid-2000s is the dominance of social media. If you say in your messaging that Broward County and Fort Lauderdale is ready, it's great, it's back, but social media is filled with messages and images, et cetera, telling a different story, they're not going to believe you when they can see their friends, neighbors, or friends of friends, trusted social contacts, telling a different story. So you have to be very, very careful with your messaging and be very specific.
After that long string of storms, did anyone tally the economic impact to the tourism market?
Well, actually, the interesting part is that we were quite successful in that series. We saw very little of a downtick for two reasons. One is that the overall damage, while significant to us at the time, wasn't as devastating, certainly, as we're seeing with Harvey and Irma. The second thing is that the industry did an amazing job at responding and shifting that visitation. And so the net gain as a state was not a significant loss. However, particular areas that lost their capacity to host visitors may have lost. So there's a difference between the aggregate state impact and what, for example, in Monroe County is going to experience themselves as a result of Irma.
You've had this very thorough attack on Visit Florida from the House Speaker. You've had significant budget cuts to Visit Florida. There's been a change in the CEO. Are all those going to hamper efforts to recover the industry after Irma?
I think the mission and the commitment to state tourism marketing and the Florida brand remains. But one could make an argument that the distraction and now the resulting deterioration of a relationship involving 11 destination marketing organizations scattered throughout the state are going to make it a little bit more difficult to respond with the same energy and momentum that they would have otherwise.
That was Dale Brill, former chief marketing officer for Visit Florida and head of the Florida Office of Tourism, Trade, and Economic Development, speaking with Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash. Well, here's one story that is not storm-related this week, at least for now, because the aftermath of Irma could have an effect on the numbers next month. Florida's unemployment rate ticked down to 4% in August as the state continued to fare better than the nation on joblessness. That was a drop of 0.1 percentage point from July, according to numbers released today by the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity. That represented about 408,000 unemployed Floridians out of a workforce of just over 10 million. Florida's latest figure was also 0.4 percentage point better than the national unemployment rate. It was 4.4% in August. The Department of Economic Opportunity said Monroe County, which includes the Florida Keys, had the state's lowest jobless rate in August at 2.7%. However, we got to add that's probably going to change big time for September, as the extensive devastation down there, especially in Key West, will mean a bunch of people won't have jobs to go back to, at least in the immediate term. Hendry County, meanwhile, had the highest unemployment rate in Florida at 10.2%. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, several former Florida athletes are using their platform to help Hurricane Irma victims. Sasha Cordner has more.
Several people cheered a World War II veteran who just played the harmonica for Tim Tebow at a special needs shelter. Following Hurricane Irma, the Heisman Trophy winner and former Gator football quarterback traveled the state. Tebow's stops included his hometown of Jacksonville, one of the hardest hit areas. It also included a visit to the State Emergency Management Center in Tallahassee, where he took pictures, shook hands, and thanked many volunteers and officials who helped and are continuing to do so.
You know, all the shelters that I've been to, there have been a lot of people that have had a lot of worry, a lot of doubt, and a little afraid of the unknown. What's going to happen when I get back to my home? What's going to happen, you know, with my family? How am I going to connect? But the one thing that they had is they had someone that was beside them, a volunteer, a nurse, someone that cared about them, that was there the entire time, that was loving them, that was caring for them. And the entire time, they knew that they weren't in this alone.
As part of his visits, he traveled with Governor Rick Scott, who says Tebow was in constant contact with him through the storm.
Tim has been a friend, and he's somebody, as we all know, that really cares about people. He's called me up constantly during this storm and said, what can I do to be helpful? He's helped us get the message out, and then he's also been visiting shelters.
And Tebow, now a minor league baseball player, thanked the governor for his handling of Irma.
Well, I think first and foremost, I just want to thank you for how much that you cared about all the people of this state and how you went above and beyond to take care of them, especially all the people with special needs, because that's so near and dear to my heart. And just want to let all the people of our state know how much so many people are praying for you and love you and are there to help you and are alongside you of this difficult time. And it's not like you can make everything better at once, but you can know that people are praying for you, that they love you, and they're here with you, walking this journey out with you.
Meanwhile, Tebow isn't the only athlete expressing his support for Irma victims. Former Florida State quarterback and current NFL player Jameis Winston did so as well.
Before we kick off the season, first and foremost, I just want to send out prayers to everyone who's been affected by these storms over the past few weeks. And I want to continue to pray for the people who are still in the path of these storms. I just want to pray for your health and your safety. We will come together and we will overcome this adversity.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers' September 10th game against the Miami Dolphins in South Florida was postponed due to Irma, but later Winston said his mind isn't really on football right now.
I went through a tough time, you know, watching, you know, but, you know, I really wasn't thinking about myself, you know. I was thinking about, you know, what we were going through, you know, what the people in Florida were going through, what the people in Houston had went through, because at the end of the day, everything is bigger than football. Obviously, I want to be out there on the field. I definitely wanted to be playing, but, you know, sometimes you got to take that back seat and let things happen.
Meanwhile, Winston is encouraging everyone to donate to support Irma recovery relief efforts at JameisWinston3.org. In a tweet, he says he will match the first $50,000 donated for that cause. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Kordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And please join us again next week at this time for more reports from the State Capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.